Hey everybody, you're listening to Top Quartile, where we bring you stories from the front lines of growth in community-focused financial services. Well, hello and welcome. I'm Dan Marks, partner and EVP at Infusion, and my guest today is Brent Beardall, the president and CEO at Washington Federal Bank. Brent, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, Dan. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely. Me too. You've got some exciting things going on at WaFed there. Can you describe your role a little bit more as we get started?
Yeah, happy to do that. So I have the good fortune of being only the sixth CEO in 104 years. And I've been with the bank now for over 20 years, in this role for 4 years. So you talk about pressure. I just have to wake up every day and think about getting to 2037 to not take down the average of CEO tenure.
I love it. Well, what's one fascinating fact, maybe personally or otherwise, about yourself that most people don't know?
Well, I started working very young in my career. So at 16 years old, I went to work for a bank in Orange County, California. Here I live just a few miles from Newport Beach. And I started working in a file room at a bank and then quickly moved from the file to collecting on auto loans. And so that's something that, looking back in my life, really kind of shaped a lot of who I am. To learned a lot about human behavior and about living beyond your means and also living up to commitments. So that's something that most people don't know about me. At a young age, I started working in a bank, but literally on the ground floor, in the basement, in the file room, filing pink slips on cars back when we had those. Today, it's all on blockchain. Well, hopefully it will be on blockchain, not there. But that really kind of gave me my foundation in understanding the financial system we have today and my fascination with banking and how we can use banking to our advantage.
Yeah, that's a great background. That reminds me, so George Slogel, who was the CEO at the old Hancock Bank, started in the mailroom as well. Talk about starting on the ground level. Well, tell me, there's some exciting things happening at WaFed. What kind of growth have you been seeing recently there?
You know, we have been so very fortunate. We've been growing like crazy. So in the last year during the pandemic, our deposits have grown by over 22%. So we're seeing the inflows of deposits. We've recently undergone a brand change, telling the world we are WaFed. Historically, our name was just Washington Federal. So telling the world we're a bank has really resonated throughout our 8 states where we do business. And it's really fun. We're winning business from the likes of Wells Fargo, JP Morgan. And we like to say we're big enough to be relevant, small enough to be nimble. And so we're winning market share almost every day. And that's just the deposit side. If you look at loans, we're growing our loan production. In 2019, it was a record year for us. We had $4 billion of loans we produced that year. Then the pandemic happened last year. We increased loan production with the majority of our commercial teams working remotely. We went from $4 billion to $6 billion, so a 50% increase in production. And so far this year, we're halfway through our fiscal year. We're on pace for $8 billion of production. So growth is the operative word in terms of what's happening at WaFed Bank.
And so you mentioned you'd been the CEO for 4 years now. Can you describe kind of your leadership philosophy that's helped set the stage for that growth?
I don't know that I can take credit for it. We have a great organization, but really what I try to do is hire the right people, empower those employees, build a strong culture around the employees, all based on integrity, and then quite frankly, get out of the way. I've found that if you can do those things, you can really get employees that are motivated to do the right thing. When I had the good fortune of taking on the position of CEO, I wrote every employee a letter. And I thought, what a great idea. And I'm not just going to do the printed signature. I'm going to sign each individual letter, which was, you know, a fine idea until you realize that, okay, 2,000 employees signing your name 2,000 times, that takes a little bit. But then I can't just sign my name when I know an employee. Then you write a little note, you know, Margaret, look forward to working with you. I hope your kids are doing okay, whatnot. It ended up taking me the better part of 4 or 5 days. But in that letter, I asked every employee to do 2 things. Number one, I said, love what you do. It is so meaningful to love what you do. And not every job we have at the bank is glamorous, right? When I started at a different bank back when I was 16 in the file room, that's not a glamorous job. We have jobs that aren't very glamorous, whether it be collecting on loans, whether it be taking care of, you know, problem assets, having to work through bankruptcy, so forth. Not everything is glamorous, but you need to figure out a way to love what you do. And I also empowered the team by saying, if you don't love what you do, that's okay. It doesn't make you a bad person. Either figure out how to love to do your job today, or you're empowered to go do something else. Quite frankly, you'll be happier, you'll be better off, and so will we as a bank. And after you love what you do, empowered everyone to make a difference. Be part of the solution. Don't simply just go with the flow. And this was something that was a little bit out there compared to who we've been historically, but I encouraged everyone to challenge me, challenge leadership. Never be in a meeting where you get nothing out of it. You're not making a difference. If you're in a meeting and you're getting nothing out of it, you're not making a difference. To the contrary, you're just wasting your time and others' times. And if you hear me in a meeting say something that you know is untrue, speak up, do it in a respectful manner, but say, Brent, to the contrary, I think it might be this way, right? There's nothing worse than having a leader lead the group astray. Yeah. And I don't know everything. Hopefully I have my fingers on the pulse of the company and understand what's happening, but you know, I'm fallible and I can make mistakes. And I empowered people to make a difference, but it's not just making a difference in meetings. It's making a difference for your clients, whether that's staying late after work to get a loan done or get a deposit posted in time or making sure a wire transfer goes through on time. But it's making a difference in the communities. And it's up to each employee to decide, how are they going to make a difference? What are they going to, are they going to be part of a neighborhood coalition? Are they going to be part of a, you name it. It can be the little kids or little league soccer team. It can be the baseball team. It can be on the Chamber of Commerce. I believe strongly that we cannot complain or protest about things how they are if we're not involved in what the solution is. And it's part of the culture that we've built up that don't just come with a problem. Come with the problem you've identified and what is the solution? How can we be part of the solution? How can we make a difference? And I think those two things have been really instrumental in kind of our growth and really not only maintaining our culture, but enhancing our culture and turning WaFd Bank into a bank where really ultimately we'll be successful if people want to come to work for us because of the reputation we have in the marketplace, both among clients and among our employees.
Very well said. I can see how that would be an inspiring philosophy to help the team succeed. You talk some in your annual report about frictionless. What does the word frictionless mean to you, and how does that benefit clients?
Yeah, let me say to me, frictionless is aspirational. We are far from frictionless, right? We want banking to be easy, reliable, and fast. Too often, and being a 104-year-old bank, historically, we intentionally put in speed bumps, right? We put those speed bumps in the name of internal controls.
Oh, yeah.
We want to be sure what's happening and why it's happening. And those are friction points. And whether that friction point is, you know, Dan, you have an account here and you want to transfer $10,200 to another bank. And we say, anything over $10,000, we're going to require human intervention. Right. Historically, we do that under the guise of safety and soundness and wanting to protect you. But all you really care about is, hey, you've already verified who I am. It's my money. Let me move it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really who we're aspiring to be, is give you full access, full transparency to your money and allow you to do with your money what you want to do with your money. And that's where we think we'll have the opportunity to take market share. Is make it easy for people to do what they want to do. But it doesn't mean not having controls. It means taking controls and automating those controls, because you're very invested to make sure that nobody takes the money from your account, as are we. So let's make sure whatever that is, if we use biometrics to verify your identity, or if after you hit whatever threshold, instead of a human being calling you, you're going to have to give a new PIN that is sent to your cell phone that's, you know, previously installed. There's all kinds of ways around it, but create a frictionless experience where you can do what you want to do at the same time. Not, okay, you're going to have to go into a queue and get this done, but figure out a path forward to take out that friction to allow our clients to do what they need to do. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, hot damn, I can't wait to go do my banking today. Right? No.
That's right. No, no. Never talk to somebody who said that. That's right.
Yeah, never. People wake up and say, hot damn, I can't wait to live my life today.
That's right.
But it turns out I need to do my banking to get my life. So let's give people a path to get their banking done, that they can have trust and confidence in their bank and full transparency in what's happening. And the reality is, in the banking industry, right, there's over 5,000 banks. The technology is terribly antiquated. It's set up for an olden time, right? I mean, it's still the reality that there's AS400s running banking systems back there.
Yep.
And so our opportunity to become a digital first bank is to really reinvent the technology stack in banking and use modern architecture and API calls, you know, and microservices to get the information to our clients when, where, and how they want it.
Yeah, that's an awesome goal. And you set out a goal to actually be a digital first bank by 2025, I believe.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the irony is there. When I got to the bank back in 2000, we were the antithesis of a digital first bank. No, it's true, right? I mean, acknowledge your strengths and acknowledge your weaknesses. When I got to the bank in 2001, think about this, 2001, yep. We didn't have email at the bank.
Oh, wow.
I was literally doing $100 million trades for our investment portfolio on my Yahoo email account.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's true. You can't make this stuff up. And oh, by the way, the ledger for the holding company, which I think had about a $600 million market cap at the time, was done on a Tallchief tablet by hand.
Ah, with the abacus,
not quite the abacus, but the Tallchief tablet, right? And I looked at this and I said, what an opportunity,
yeah.
Right? And here we are in the backyard of Amazon, the backyard of Microsoft. And the irony is we were the most efficient bank or thrift in the country as measured by the efficiency ratio. How many pennies it takes to generate a dollar of revenue. We were efficient because we did things, we stayed away from technology. But we rode that train as far as you could ride it. Now we have said, hey, we are going to go from being the non-digital bank to being a digital first bank. And I think it's important that it's a digital first bank and not a digital only bank, mm-hmm. because relationships matter. You can't have just technology. We are a portfolio lender. It makes a difference. Being a portfolio lender means we don't sell your loan.
Yeah.
It is one of the most important financial decisions a person can make is their mortgage loan. And some people just want to stay up in the middle of the night and do their mortgage loan and have it happen frictionless. Great. We want to provide that channel, but we also want to provide an opportunity to call up a banker and talk about your options and figure out what loan's best for you. Be that trusted advisor. So if we can pair technology with relationships, we can take market share.
Yeah, that's very well said. Because how many times have we all encountered somebody who, or some company that views digital as kind of, oh, this is great. I can keep my customers away from humans, you know, wade through 17 different IVR prompts to only be told that you're no longer open and call back later. Those kind of experiences are sort of the antithesis of frictionless. They're full of friction.
And recently we had a phenomenal example for that, right? We can over leverage technology.
Yeah.
And the most recent example of that is PPP.
Yeah.
Right. The Paycheck Protection Program. All of the big banks struggled mightily with PPP in the beginning, right? Because their systems just had no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And their customers called up and they said, sorry, we have no idea. We're working on it. We'll get back to you in a couple of weeks, if not months. So you had this huge just outcry from customers. Are you kidding me? And the reality is the SBA was making up the program as they went. I mean, nobody had all of the answers. We had never made an SBA loan. And in the span of 2 weeks, we went from never having made an SBA loan to offering SBA loans and getting them done in the span of just a couple of days for people, because we had human beings paired with technology.
Yeah.
And people were willing to understand that, hey, this is an iterative process. The SBA is making that up. But over 50% of our PPP loans were to new clients. And over this last year, we did over 9,000 PPP loans for $1.1 billion after having done none before. And that's because we had the combination of bankers you could call and answer questions. How do we do this? What's happening?
Yep.
With technology, in my opinion, and I could be proven to be wrong, you can't just be a digital only bank. You need to be a digital first bank. And if you can combine great technology that makes people go, wow, that was easy, that was fast, with bankers that have a relationship and you trust, the world is our oyster.
Yeah, very exciting agenda there. And what does the team think about the goal you've set out and the way you've kind of articulated that?
At first, there was a great deal of skepticism considering where we were coming from. But now it is remarkable how the team has absolutely embraced it and they can see the power of technology. Most importantly, how you can use technology to benefit the client.
Yeah.
And that's one of the coolest things. We had people working literally 17, 18, 20 hours a day during PPP because it made a difference to the clients, right? They would love to be the ones calling up the client and say, we got your loan approved. Here's your SBA number. Literally tears from clients and from our employees. And that goes right back to what I was talking about, making a difference. A job is just a job. No, we want more than a job, right? People can work here or they can work at any other bank. You need to have purpose.
Yep.
And really, that's what I want to do as a CEO of WaFed Bank is provide an opportunity, the arena for our bankers to really be self-fulfilled and make a difference in the lives of their clients and go home at night and sleep well at night, knowing that we're not going to turn around and sell the loan, knowing that we're not looking to maximize short-term profits, but really maximize the value of the relationship over the long haul.
Yeah, and you're taking tangible actions to back that up too, and that energizes a team.
No, and to your point, right? Words are cheap. We have our mission statement, we have our core values. They're up on posters, they're on our website, so forth. But words are just words. We need to look for ways every day to live our values.
That's where the spade work happens, and that's great.
That's exactly right.
So in this, kind of ambitious agenda that the team is embarking on together, what's the role that analytics and research plays in informing kind of the actions you're taking?
It plays a huge part in it, and it really just shows what our opportunity is. Because let me play out a scenario for you. This is the sad reality of all banks, including WaFed Bank. If you were a client of ours for 15 years, had your checking account with us, your credit card with us, then you came to us and said, I'm thinking of buying a home. Brent, can I get a home loan through you? We'd say, Dan, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We love the relationship. Here's a PDF application we want you to fill out. Right? You laugh because you know it's true.
Yeah.
Right. So what do analytics do for us? What has Amazon shown us what we should do? What we should do is a bank say, Dan, fantastic. We know who you are. We know where you work. We know how much you make. We know where you live. We know the value of your home now. We know what your mortgage is today. Fantastic. Dan, here are your 5 home loan options. Which would you like to choose?
Yeah.
And look over all this information. And if there's something we have wrong, tell us. We'll fix it. That's the power of analytics. That's the power of data and actually using the data we have today that we don't use. And honestly, I don't know of a bank in the country that does it well today. And that's our opportunity.
And for all the talk about big data, you're talking about, the example you just gave is a great example of small practical data. You know, hey, look, this is an opportunity that's staring us in our face as we listen to our customers. Let's put some applied focus on this, solving this issue for a client and then seeing the impact it can have.
It's really doing exactly what Amazon has done, right?
Yeah.
They pay attention to what you do every day and then they try to suggest next logical steps for you.
That's right.
And we've all come to trust Amazon.
That's right.
Let's do that in banking.
Yeah. It's awesome. Well, man, the time has kind of flown by as we've talked. How would you kind of summarize your key takeaways on the topics we've covered and what's going on at WaFed? And keys to growth.
My key takeaways is there are opportunities for each and every one of us. You know, inertia is so powerful. It's one of the things I've learned in my life is we always went through school and, you know, the professor would ask you, what's the most powerful force in finance? And the answer was compound interest, right? And today with interest rates where they are, it's not quite as powerful as it used to be. Compound interest is still an unbelievably powerful tool. But I would say the most powerful force in finance is inertia.
Yeah.
People don't act in their best interest because they're just comfortable in the status quo. So what an opportunity for us to use data to point out to people, hey, Dan, you should do this to save money, right? I mean, you look at all of the people that we've effectively kicked out of the banking segment and sent to the payday lenders to be taken advantage of. Our weighted average yield on our loan portfolio, which is primarily 30-year mortgages, is just about 4%. What do people pay at payday lenders? They're paying 20 to 25%. There has to be a middle ground. So what an opportunity for us to try to disrupt some of that inertia to the benefit of both current clients we have and non-clients that we can bring to the bank.
Yeah, that's a great key takeaway and very thought-provoking. As we're wrapping up, just for fun, if you could go back and sit down with your younger self, that, you know, 16-year-old just starting out in the mailroom, what advice would you give to him?
You know, one thing I think we're always taught is to avoid risk, right? Be careful. The stove is hot. Don't touch the stove. And clearly, there are certain risks you want to stay, the moral risks, if you will. But I would give myself the advice of don't be afraid of failure. Just make sure when you're going to fail, you fail small, you fail quickly. But failure means you're learning, you're growing, you're stretching, you're pushing yourself. Don't be afraid to challenge the status quo. Too many times in life when we just do things because that's the way we've always done things. Well, question it and challenge. And I think, you know, that's kind of the intellectual curiosity and not being afraid to challenge authority, challenge it in a respectful way, but challenge authority and push the limits a little bit to try to make a difference. Try to not just... This is not about, you know, what you can do for yourself, but how can you improve the lives of others?
Yeah, very well said. Great advice. Brent, any other kind of final thoughts as we wrap up today?
I would just say for those that don't know much about WaFd Bank, we like to say we're the best kept secret around. We really are very cautious about pride and hubris, knowing that banks have failed largely because of hubris. So we're very well aware of our faults and weaknesses. And just because we've had past success, it doesn't necessarily mean we'll have future success. But really, we've had an unbelievable track record since going public in 1982. I think our total shareholder return is about 16,000%. I saw someone recently that said of all the banks in the United States that have been around for over 30 years, our shareholder return is number 7. A little bank, you know, started off in Ballard, Washington, the 7th best return of total banks. So you don't have to be out there. You don't have to be making headlines. Do what is right. Help people. And you can make a reasonable return. So it's not mutually exclusive to return a good profit for your shareholders and do what's right for your customers. I think there's room for both.
Well, Brent, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your perspective on what drives top quartile performance.
Thanks, Dan. Really appreciate it.
That's it for today on Top Quartile. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Top Quartile wherever you find podcasts on any podcast app. And while you're at it, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. And if you're interested in getting an opportunity assessment, head over to infusionmarketinggroup.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.